You're listening to We Are STS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to We Are STS. I'm your host, Professor Joe Kane. This is episode 10. Today, we're talking careers. Here in STS, careers thinking is at the core of our degree programs. Every tutor has something important to say about careers. We have our flexible futures agenda underpinning the degrees, and we make big use of the resources offered by services all across UCL. In short, we work hard at career development, and we work with the pros. To help us all learn a little more about the resources available, I've asked Catherine Cassell onto the show. Catherine is a careers counselor with UCL Careers Service. Catherine has massive experience listening to students talk about how they see the future. She knows how to help people see the possibilities ahead, then start deciding on what needs to be done to reach those goals. She's been doing this for many years, both at UCL and elsewhere. Catherine has professional degrees from several parts of the University of London. She also has been a professional coach who helps people write, present, and communicate more effectively. Here's a top networking tip. When you meet Catherine, ask her about Toastmasters. What is it? And how might it help you build key skills for the future? This episode is part one of our conversation. When we start talking careers, there's always a lot to say. We'll have part two of our conversation in a few weeks' time. We spoke over an online connection. I begin by asking Catherine to introduce herself.
Thanks, Joe. My name is Catherine Cassell, and I'm the UCL Careers Consultant for STS. And what that means to STS students is that the workshops that I give specifically for the STS department developed for them, they'll see me. They'll see me possibly if they attend any of the Career Central workshops that we run throughout the year. There's a dozen of them, and they run throughout the term. And they do what they say. They cover the career essentials. They would see me if they booked an appointment to see me. There's roughly 25 careers consultants, and you can book to see any one of us. But if they wanted to see me specifically, they can look ahead on My UCL Careers. That's a platform that they'll be automatically enrolled in, and how they can book appointments.
Fantastic. Great. So Catherine, you're a careers consultant and you live in the UCL Careers Service. So what is the career service at UCL?
Well, there's about 70 of us. And so I've already said there's roughly 25 careers consultants, but there's 50 other people. What are they doing? Well, careers involves a lot. There's a kind of employment cycle, especially for graduates, and when that happens in the academic year. And what our employer engagement team does, they look for, they source, and they check out internships. They bring employers in to speak at panel events or to run events themselves. We have careers fairs. We have a number of themed weeks. This takes a lot of people to make it happen.
It's a huge unit, and there's always all kinds of stuff going on. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the parts, but let me just interrupt with a simple question. So I know what a job is. I'm not so sure what a career is. How do you draw that distinction between a job and a career?
Well, that's a good question, Joe. And I bet there are as many answers as there are people on this earth. but let's just start with this. I think that often the first time people start thinking about that question is women. Once they've had children, they start thinking, can I still have a career? Or am I now limited to having a job? And maybe that job is in the field that I've already been having a career in. Well, I don't think it's too soon for anyone of any gender to start asking themselves those questions, because that helps you to filter and prioritize and think about what you want to do. We Let's say you have a career in a single field. I mean, this is increasingly unusual, but let's pretend for now that you do. You're going to have a number of jobs that go into that career. But let's say you also have a career that jumps across fields. Well, is that a career with a singular, or is that multiple careers? That's why I was saying there'd be so many different types of answers. Mm-hmm. But the way to think about a job, and there are different types of jobs. You probably remember the term McJob that was popular in the 80s and 90s. And that was for Generation Xers who were feeling left out with jobs that now might be called 0 hours or gig economy jobs. But even those jobs can have tremendous value. They shouldn't be undervalued. And they can have value to companies, like even people applying for really competitive companies, but they also have value to the individual. And we can talk about that more, why. Mm-hmm. So jobs make up a career. But you don't have to have a career. I mean, there are people who are really satisfied in life who've chosen not to have a career.
So if I'm a chef in a restaurant, my job might be who pays my paycheck, sort of the restaurant. And then the career is being a chef. It's all those skills and interests that go into that project. And at some point I may lose my job, which means I need to go find another job, maybe another restaurant. Or sometimes, and I think this is where you really, really shine, is if I decide I don't want to work in restaurants anymore, I don't want to make food anymore, but I've got all these skills, I can do all kinds of things that a chef has to do, but I can do them outside of a restaurant. And so when it comes to a career, I might see myself as not only a chef, but also a manager, maybe a budgeter, maybe somebody who can do logistics. I can deliver goods on time to a certain specification. And that makes me really important in industries that I never really thought about before. Am I heading in the right direction there, thinking about the difference between a job and a career?
Joe, I think we already know what your next job is when you change careers. You could be a careers consultant because you've got it. It's all about skills and recognizing your own skills. It's not just about trying to get employers to see it. The first step is for you to understand what your skills are and how they're transferable. So people maybe have heard the term soft skills or transferable skills. I always say soft skills are the hard skills. Those are developed over a lifetime, and it's through having experience and reflecting on that experience. So those kinds of things that you were talking about, that a chef, the skills that they need to do. If they were to decide, maybe I don't want to work in a kitchen anymore, maybe I don't want the late hours and the high pressure, they would then do an inventory. Look at those skills through a different set of lenses. And that's the kind of thing that we can help people do at UCL Careers through a variety of ways.
That's great. That idea of using a different set of lenses, I think, is a really handy way to think about what a careers service does. Is it encourages people to think about those alternatives and to try out those other lenses. Maybe they work, maybe they don't, but give it a try. So we started by asking what sounds like a simple question: what does the career service do? And it sounds like we've got a much more focused answer there, which is about separating jobs and skills and getting people to ask questions about what skills do I have and how do I rearrange those skills for lots of different possibilities. So that's what the career service does. But let's talk about you. So Catherine, what do you do? What's your role in the grand project that is UCL Careers?
Well, as a careers consultant, I work with students one-to-one in a variety of types of appointments. So there's guidance appointments. Those are 20 minutes. Doesn't sound like a lot of time, does it, to talk about incredibly important, personal, and often time-pressured stuff? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what our job is. As careers consultants, we provide the structure to the conversation. So for the person who's coming to us, it might be the first time they have ever had this kind of really weird appointment. You know, what is it? What am I supposed to do? Even that fear is a real barrier to entry, I find, with many students. They'll say, I can't make an appointment because I already know what I'm going to do. Or I can't make an appointment because I don't know what I'm going to do and I'm really confused. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do as careers consultants. We can do information signposting, and guidance is helping someone to think through and come up with answers that, I'm going to describe it this way, it's ecological to them. It's not about imposing. It's not about what I think they should do. I don't know them. It's about helping them to figure out how to identify the answers that often they already hold within. And if they don't, how to get the information they need to do that. So that's one part of my job. Another part is delivering the workshops that I mentioned to you earlier. Another part is working with academics like you to try and tailor a program to really meet the needs of that different department. And I work with a variety of departments. And I guess the final thing I really do is working with colleagues within UCL Careers on cross-team projects. And this year, for example, I'm going to be working on the international students team, which is a subject of great interest to me.
Let's talk about the international students. Why is it a great interest to you? I know something about your background. Tell us more.
By the way, I'm such a good example of the student who never, ever went to the career service as an undergraduate. I also didn't in any of my graduate degrees, but let's start with undergraduate. I'd look at that little pretty colonial era building and think, I can't go in there because I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm a mess and I will feel publicly humiliated. So I never went, but I did know what I wanted to do. I wanted to work overseas. And that's what got me to go to a former academic that I'd done well with who happened to be Japanese and said, I'm thinking of working in Japan. Have you got any tips? This would be called informational interviewing. And so I went to Japan. I moved with that job. I had two jobs there. I came here. Then I went back to Japan. Actually had 3 years, my only 3 years of living in the U.S. as an adult, and then I've been back here ever since. So my whole life's been really international.
But what you said at the beginning there of the story of your career is really important, which is, I didn't know what to do. I'm not sure where I was going. And do you see a lot of people like that?
All the time.
And how does that conversation start? Is it, my tutor sent me here? Or is it, I need to get a job and I don't know what to do, help? What's the first 1 minute of that interaction that you have with students?
Well, it can start either way or other ways that you didn't identify. And I think that probably the first thing I can do is try and put them at their ease to normalize it. You're not alone, because people have a tendency to take things as a personal failure as opposed to recognizing most humans are like this. And you've never got it figured out. People are still figuring it out throughout their working lives.
I guess the main point I was getting out of what you were saying was, I don't need an answer before I knock on your door to come talk to you. I just need a question. And that often is, what do I do?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
So I don't know what to do. Don't even know where to get started. I know that I need to come talk to you. And I knock on your door. Does it feel like I need to be prepared with anything? Or do I just come and sit? Do I need a plan before I walk in the door?
Well, this is where I really want to reassure any students listening to this. You don't need a plan. I am just thrilled that you bottled up the courage, and it can take courage if you are feeling so much even anxiety about your confusion. If you've made the appointment and say, and I've had so many students do this, I have, you know, at the end of my third year, I have no idea what I want to do. That's a place of bravery that they come and they tell that to someone else. And from that point, we can then start building on what they do know about themselves that's relevant, but maybe they don't realize how or why it's relevant or how to use it. And also how to help them become more informed about the things that they do need to know about the world of work out there. I would like to just add, don't wait till the end of year three. Come sooner. It does make it easier.
I do find that extraordinary how sometimes students, no matter how much you say it, no matter how much I say it, no matter how much everybody says it, go to the career service all the time. People feel like, oh, no, I can put that off. And you think, go do it. And I find the only way that motivates people these days seems to be everybody else is doing it. You should do it too. But I always feel lousy having to say that. Let's say I've made an appointment with you. I've come in. I started the conversation by saying, I don't have any idea what I want to do. What is a usual thing for me to walk out the door with? Am I going to have a job?
You are not going to have a job, Joe. You're going to have homework.
Homework, okay.
But let me, before I answer this question in more detail, let me go back to what you said earlier about this need maybe to reframe. Careers is a scary word for many people, and they might think, hey, the reason I'm choosing an interdisciplinary degree like STS, history, philosophy, stuff like that, is I don't want to think about this stuff yet. So it's less about careers and it's more about, do you want to enjoy your life more? Starting right away, because the stuff you need to be doing that's I'm going to put quotation marks, careers related while you're an undergraduate is really just about engaging with the world more, making some maybe friends in the meantime with similar interests, finding out that you like stuff that you didn't realize and you're good at stuff you didn't realize. That's way more attractive than, oh dear, to-do list, parents on my back, gotta go to the career service. I mean, that's why I never win. Joe, let's reframe it together.
Okay, so it's about enjoying ourselves for the rest of our lives. It's about doing stuff that we really want to do and things we find rewarding. And to think about career and to think about job is kind of very short-term, desperate, isn't it?
Well, let me get back and answer your question, okay?
Yeah, brilliant.
So after 20 minutes, where we will explore, and it will be different with every single student. Every individual has a different pace, a different style, a different way of working. So it's client-centered in terms of the pace, but my job is to make sure that we do keep on track, check in, make sure that we're hitting the client's priorities. Mm-hmm. I might do a check-in after about 10 minutes just to make sure, because of course I'm really conscious of what you can do in 20 minutes and how much time is elapsing, but this is the other person's maybe first time ever. So I'm not expecting them to keep track of the time. I'm expecting them to be able to focus on thinking about what matters to them. And then at the end, I always conclude with a little bit of, get them to do some action plan creation, kind of a bullet point list. Mm-hmm. As a result of this appointment, I'm going to do, and I try and keep that really focused. You are not trying to sort out your life. You're not trying to sort out the next 3 years. And depending on what the content of that session's been about, that's where I might suggest a time frame. It's best if someone comes up with their own, because that is organic. But if they aren't so sure, because they've never done this before, I might suggest something that seems like a reasonable time so they don't bite up more than they can chew. The most important thing is not to make an overly ambitious plan that then is overwhelming and you don't do it. Just something you can manage.
Just getting started, right? So a few things, get going, get into the rhythm, understand what this whole process is, which is about reflection. What am I good at? What do I like to do? And off we go. And so the big message for students is it's really easy to set up an appointment for a chat. The chat itself is really easy. And then afterwards, there's some homework, there's some things to do. So after those kind of consultations, what do you want students to do? How does their path continue after a consultation with you? Do they come back? Do they go away and you never see them again? What happens?
All of the above. Mm-hmm. So I saw a master's degree student earlier today that I had met once in December. She told me she was going for an interview, so she had a new set of questions. And that kind of leads naturally into the way I look at the careers process and the work that we do and the work students do and all of us do in life is there's three parts to it. So there's the psychological part. I'm going to call that roughly half, because that's what I've done on the slide that I have to illustrate this point. And then on the other half of the slide, I've got the practical side. And by the way, this is all knowledge, that psychological knowledge, self-awareness that comes from reflection and doing. And then there's the practical side, which is commercial awareness or sector awareness. And that's things like read the newspaper, follow the news, listen to relevant podcasts, don't have no idea what's going on in the world. And then the third component, I think of the way to think about this is like almost like a module. And it's a very practical skills-based module. And it's the application side, because it's a skill. It's a game. Learn the rules of the game. And we offer those kinds of workshops and career essentials in abundance to learn the rules of the game. And you could call it the most boring and pedestrian side of it, but it still needs to be done. And to me, the way to make it more interesting is to make it a game. I would encourage people to go to the things that not only careers offers, but STS also has a ton of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. UCL community is a vibrant community. It has lots of activities, lots of people coming in, but also do things, volunteering, part-time job, societies. The more you do, the more you find out what you like, what you don't like, what you want to get better at, maybe even what you need to get better at. Mm-hmm. And that's the psychological side. That's huge. That takes time. The practical side about applications, that's pretty quickly learnable. Mm-hmm. Commercial sector awareness, that takes more time. You build it over time, naturally. Psychological takes the most time because it's involving engaging with the world and doing stuff.
In terms of students coming to you, it sounds like early on in their time at UCL, you want them to come and talk and engage and to think about the things in the psychological side. And then over the course of their studies, they build on the context, the opportunities that are available. And then in the third year, start thinking more about that CV and what it looks like and the formality of an application and that particular skill. Do I have that kind of timeline about right?
Well, it's interesting that you want to put it on a timeline. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, historically, the careers approach was, I believe, that, you know, we did things by year group. But in fact, all of us are different, right? We know that. So let's not just give lip service to it. I run my workshops by theme. Mm-hmm. Because you can have a year one who's really ready to go, and you can have a year three who isn't. So let's think about where you are, and my workshops are designed so anyone from any year group can go in, and it speaks to where they are. Actually, nowadays, I mean, in my day, you didn't need a printed CV to go get a job as a waitress or work in retail, whereas now you do. Mm-hmm. So it's not too early to get a kind of skeleton core CV together in your first year and to start a LinkedIn profile, I might add. It's not too early to do that.
What I really like about your answer is it's not a cookie cutter. It's people respond in different ways. And so for the students who are listening to the podcast who are thinking, oh man, I'm miles ahead on this. Well, maybe you are, that's fine. But the system is going to adapt around you and your needs. Whereas if a student who is advanced in their time of study, but yet doesn't feel like they've got started, get going because the opportunities are here, right? I mean, does that sound like better thinking on my part?
Yeah, the opportunities are here. And if you feel behind, don't use that as a reason to not act. If you feel like you can't come to us because you are a shameful mistake, imposter syndrome, that you're at UCL because all of your friends already have blue chip internships lined up and you don't, so clearly there's something wrong with you, please just put that thinking to the side. You would not believe how many incredibly accomplished UCL students we all meet who all feel like they are somehow mistakenly where they are. Just, you're who you are. And we're here to help you find more who you are.
Let's move on a little bit more. And I'm going to ask you a really hard and wide, massively wide question, which is, what do you want STS students to know when it comes to career thinking?
Okay. The most important thing for them to know about how to use career service is how to book appointments. And I know that might sound really, really silly, but we have a lot of demand in the autumn term. Mm-hmm. And it can be hard to get an appointment. So here's the way to use the system. It's just the way the system works, is that appointments are released exactly 1 week in advance of the appointment. So if it's a Tuesday morning and there's a 10 a.m. appointment of whatever type, it's released exactly a week before. So pressing the refresh button multiple times between 2 and 5 in the morning when you're up studying, there's still going to be no new appointments. It's only if someone else happened to be up at that hour and decided to cancel an appointment when you are looking. Mm-hmm. So that's the way to book it. It does require more planning than maybe students want to do, especially about something they might be feeling anxious about. Mm-hmm. Like maybe they've got that moment of just, okay, I'm going to do it. And then they see there's no appointments available. And then that becomes another barrier to entry. Well, what I'm saying is, if you just do it during regular working hours, that's when the appointments are released throughout the day. So that's careers. But I have another answer.
Okay, right. Give it to me. Go right ahead.
The thing that I think that is most important for students to be developing is a tolerance for confusion and ambiguity.
Right. Why is that?
Well, we live in confusing times. Mm-hmm. But just being a human being is kind of confusing, right? a lot's going on out there. And something that really changed my life, but I didn't hear this until I was in my mid-40s maybe, was confusion. Or the way this trainer put it was, the common denominator of all geniuses is that they know that confusion precedes new learning.
Ah.
And I think that's one of the most powerful things I've ever learned. Especially for all of our high-achieving perfectionist UCL students. Oh, it's okay, this messy confusion I'm feeling. Confusion precedes new learning.
We talked about what you think STS students should know about you. Well, let's turn it around and ask you a different question. What do you want to know about STS students?
Well, if I were meeting with them as an individual, what I'd want to know more than anything is, what are they interested in?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd probably say the next question is, and I wouldn't necessarily ask this directly, but I might. It depends on where they are, which is, what impact do they want to have?
Ah, okay. Yeah. What difference do they want to make in the world?
And I definitely address that in most of my workshops, I have different slides around those kind of questions.
Mm-hmm. What do people say, just on the off chance, when you ask them that kind of question? What's a typical response?
It's very interesting. Some people get a little nervous and don't really feel that they can tell me because they don't feel like it's relevant and it's going to be embarrassing because it's not serious enough. And other people become alive. They're so excited about something. And then it's just a question of like, okay, well, that's a lot of material to work with right away. So where can you use that? Where is that interest?
And do you get a lot of people saying something like, well, my parents want me to do this, or my friends want me to do this? Is that a typical part of that answer?
Yes. There are times when I feel like the parents are, back when we met in person, I felt that the parents were in the pod with me. Because everything I asked, well, my mother says, or my parents say, or my father says. And the thing is, it's your life.
When I hear something like that, I often say something along the lines of, mostly what your parents want is they want you to be safe, they want you to be happy, and they want you to be secure. So if you can come up with a solution that shows them that those are going to be, you're in your path, they're going to be really happy. If you want to be a painter and you can show them how becoming a painter can make you secure, make you happy, move things along in a sustainable way, your parents are going to go for it. So long as you can hear what your parents are really saying, it often doesn't matter what the particular choice is. Do you think I'm being sensible there, or am I just giving crazy advice?
I think you're being sensible. I don't know if you've read Paul Graham's blog, How to Do What You Love, but he talks about how parents are by their very nature conservative. And what you just described is a kind of protective conservative of kind of having their arms wrapped around them. They want to make sure that they're safe.
Yeah, and that's a really common parental response. And as a person responding to that, if you can respond to it, don't worry, mom and dad and everybody else, don't worry. It'll be okay. I got a plan. You know, I will be okay. And then, of course, families can be incredibly supportive once they understand that that's the path you want to take. So Catherine, we're heading towards the end of the interview. Let me ask you this. If you were to give out some top tips to STS students for how to think about their careers right about now, what would you give them? What are your top tips?
Well, I'll reiterate some of the things that I already said, which are to start now, which is to attend careers events. We've got a lot of those, a lot of fairs on in the autumn. We've got themed weeks that run. There's one in the autumn term, and then the rest are in the term two. You know, attend panel events run by employers, get different perspectives. All of this will be contributing to you building up the sector knowledge, commercial awareness. Don't judge a book by its cover. Go to things that don't even look interesting. And you'll develop skills even by going to these things. Even if at the beginning you feel too shy to speak, that's okay. You're learning through observation. And we've also got, I've got a favorite blog by a colleague about how to network, even if you're cripplingly shy. And so there's resources out there. And then finally, it's really about doing. You need to get out there and do.
And by that, you mean go to events, engage with people.
Part-time jobs, volunteer.
All right. Okay. So get out there and do, but
deeper level of doing.
Yeah. And so when students say, well, there's no money in that, or I was going to get an internship, but it wasn't paid. Being paid is okay, but volunteering is really important, isn't it?
Well, I'm an advocate of volunteering. I've done it my entire life. From my first graduate job, I was also doing some volunteering on the side, and that helped me get my next job, which was a great job. Mm-hmm. It gave me more experience.
We were just talking last week with a couple of master students about taking up an opportunity to help out a charity with a little bit of social media. They were very excited about what the charity was doing, and the charity was very excited about getting some help. And what I said to both of them was basically go for it, but at the same time, structure it a little bit. So say something like, this is going to be a 4-week activity where I'm going to put in roughly a day a week. And at the end of 4 weeks, we'll make some decisions about whether I stay or whether I go. And I said, the value of doing that, of course, is that if you really like it, fantastic. You did something, you know, you did a definable task. You did something that you can take credit for and something that they can see that you did. And at the same time, if you gave it a go and you don't like it, close the door. I mean, finish that project and then walk away and say, well, I did a 4-week internship at this particular organization and this is what I did. It wasn't for me, so I went on to something else. But at least that's the tangible result. So what they've done is basically they started with a conversation in a pub, and then they moved on to sort of structuring an activity for a couple of weeks where they're going to do a little bit just to see it and sample it. At the end of 4 weeks, they're going to make some decisions about whether to build, do some more, or walk away and go off. And I think from volunteering point of view, that's great because it saves the organization from getting a volunteer who drifts, and it saves a volunteer from getting sucked into something that is just way too much larger than they actually thought they were taking on at the time. Does that make sense? Does that seem to fit?
Totally. I mean, I was just going to add to that. Volunteering is a great way to develop skills that you know you need to develop because you have identified a sector that you want to go into or a type of role, and you realize you're a little weak on that. It's an opportunity to get exposed to things that you didn't know about before. It's a chance to try out a sector and find out if it's for you. There is no such thing as a job or an internship or volunteering role that is a complete zero. Even if you hated it, you learned from that. And sometimes you learn more from what didn't work than what did work. And it is never going to be easier to volunteer than while you're at UCL because the student union's got a great website that they have done all the organizational work. I used to be the chair of a trustee board for a small charity. And I was always trying to get more volunteers in because I just totally believe in the value of volunteering for all parties. But there's a lot of rules and a lot of legal ramifications. Well, the student union sorted that all out for you. And there's a huge variety. And if you just keep looking on a regular basis, you're going to see something. Ideally, it would combine maybe skills and content that you're interested in, maybe in the sector you're interested in, but maybe it won't. It'll just be one or the other. I mean, that'll be good enough. And you're looking for something that will be they've made it really organized. You're looking for something that's a long-term commitment. Long-term commitment means maybe once a week for 6 months or something. Something where you can really get your teeth into it. Sometimes those things turn into longer opportunities. Sometimes they can turn into jobs that are paid. But the point is to be experiencing life. And it really builds people's confidence.
Yeah, and I was thinking, to use the chef example I was talking about at the very beginning of our conversation, I was thinking about how the volunteer unit at UCL, if I were to look at that, I might think of, I want to be a chef, but I wouldn't volunteer to be a chef. I might volunteer, though, to do the kinds of skill development that good chefs have, and not just around food, but again, around logistics and time management and people management and accounting and all that other stuff that goes into being a master of that particular activity. So it's volunteering is a great way to skill develop outside of the thing you think the job is, but it builds those broader career skills. Right. So some top tips there. Right. You're always suggesting books for me. So I want to end the podcast by asking you simply, is there something that you're reading right about now that you really think that I should read or the listeners should read? You did send me on one. So if you don't have an answer, I will tell you what you suggested.
I'll tell you, the book I'm reading right now is the UCL One book, which is the book that you all read over the summer, and so that the entire STS community has a shared point together, and I think that's great. So that's what I'm currently reading. But that because of my interest in intercultural things, I've read two fantastic books this summer, which I'm also going to be plugging in my workshops, because after all, we are London's global university, and we are operating in a global world. And one is The Culture Map by Aaron Meyer, and the other is The Geography of Thought by Edward Nesbitt, I think his name is. Mm-hmm. Those are my two top reads this summer.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to leave to students to ask you about them. That could be, if you're a student and you're going to go to one of the workshops that Catherine's presenting this year, you can come asking the question, what was that book about? And then she'll know that you listened to the podcast, and that's extra points for you. So there's your bonus in the for sticking with us, folks. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for taking the time to be here on We Are STS. We're so glad you did, and we're really looking forward to doing some more activities with you this year. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Joe, for having me. It's been a pleasure to talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is careers. And I hadn't even realized it was one of my favorite subjects until my children told me that I talk about it obsessively. So I guess I lived the life.
Fantastic. Thank you. We'll see you again soon. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Well, that's our episode for today. Thanks, everybody, for coming along. And very special thanks to Catherine Cassell for joining us today. Remember, this episode is the first of two we have with Catherine. Careers work isn't just a one-off thing, remember. It's something you need to work at on a regular basis. We'll have the second part of our chat in a few weeks' time. If you're an STS student, you can schedule all sorts of appointments with the careers folks just through one connection. It's the MyUCL Careers account. Just go to their website, ucl.ac.uk/careers, and you'll see the link. And something I didn't know, if you've graduated from UCL, the service is available to you too, for free, for 3 years after your degree. Hey, that's worth knowing about. Music today has featured one of my favorite pieces by Kevin MacLeod, Rolling at 5. It's available from the website filmmusic.io. We Are STS is a production of the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. If you're wondering about our degrees and our teaching, just get in touch. We're always happy to talk. Finally, you can find out more about the show, tell us what you think, and explore our programs just by visiting our website. Here's the address, so write it down, ucl.ac.uk/STS/podcast. That's it for today. We'll meet here again soon. I can't wait. Until next time, everybody, I'm Professor Joe Kane. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to We Are STS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Subscribe to the show and join us online. The address, ucl.ac.uk/STS/podcast.